Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way podcast, which is being recorded the day after the 1-0 defeat at Chelsea. And so much has, of course, already been said about that, not just the game, but some of the issues on the sidelines as well. Is it really the beginning of the end now for Ange Postecoglou? I'm Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard is with me. He was at Stamford Bridge last night. It was a late night and an early start for the newspaper boys because Ange was giving another press conference at 10 o'clock. Friday morning, post-Chelsea, ahead of Southampton on Sunday. So actually, Dan, before we rake over some of the issues from the game, what sort of a mood was the Spurs manager in just a few hours on from that?
Hi, Marcus. Yeah, good question. He was, I would say, defiant, and he came out swinging a little bit. Most of the most interesting comments are embargoed, but I think by the time people are listening to this, they will have come out. And effectively, Postecoglou echoed Conte. There were very similar themes in what he said today. He said that Spurs should stick with a manager, and he said that they need to change a lot of things at the club in order to have success. And obviously, we all remember, because it's particularly here at the Tottenham Way, because it's part of our intro music, that Conte infamously said, if Tottenham wants to change the situation, Tottenham has to change. You know, whatever it was, you know, he called for widespread change at the club, and said, you know, you can change the manager and nothing different's going to happen. Kind of similar message, I would say, from Postecoglou today. I would encourage everyone to seek out his quotes, and obviously I'll be doing a write up of the press conference and so have many others. He also kind of talked about the lack of other voices at the club, which is, again, a point that some of his predecessors have reached. I think Conte mentioned it. I certainly think Mourinho, I remember Mourinho mentioning it. And obviously we can, you know, he appeared to be referring to the kind of pundit class in part, you know, saying there are voices outside the club. There was a great line where he said, we've had two decisions go for us against Liverpool, and it's basically led to a national campaign. And I think what he meant was, you know, there are lots of kind of strong voices setting the narrative for clubs like Liverpool, maybe Arsenal, maybe Chelsea, the Manchester clubs in the media. And there aren't so many for Spurs. But I think what he also meant was there's no one else at this club coming out and speaking and offering a robust defence. And obviously that comes back to Levy, who, as we know, doesn't like to speak, doesn't like to do interviews, doesn't like anyone else to speak and do interviews. And obviously Johan Langer, I think I'm the only UK newspaper reporter certainly to have interviewed him. Scott Mann hasn't done any interviews. So Postecoglou's right. There aren't many voices defending him. So yeah, a very interesting press conference from Postecoglou. Obviously, he was very much on the back foot this morning after what happened at Stamford Bridge last night. Yeah, I've said this before on the pod, but you know, certainly I had pretty strong feelings about where he stood last night, and he did kind of reel me back in a little bit because he is compelling to listen to when he's in full flow. But we will get into kind of how I feel and I think how a lot of supporters feel in due course, I think.
Well, we may as well get into it now. Ear Cup Gate. I have to say, listen, I've made it very clear for quite a long time, and I'm not trying to be clever in hindsight, because he's, for me, not being the right man for quite a long time. I wanted to believe him when, in his post-match interview, he claimed that the ear cupping was simply a response to the Spurs fans. He wanted to hear them celebrating a goal. Now, obviously, it went horribly wrong. It was very misjudged. Has he signed his death warrant sooner or later by doing that?
I find it hard to imagine Postecoglou coming back from this, really. And you said in the intro, is this the beginning of the end? I think that's probably quite generous. I think you could go back much further and kind of pinpoint any number of moments as the beginning of the end. This felt more like the middle of the end, really. And I don't like saying that because as you know, I like Ange, you know, and I admire his principles for the most part. I admire the way he wants to play. I admire his kind of passion and single-mindedness and sort of commitment. But it's kind of very difficult to imagine him coming back from kind of what I felt, you know, being in just behind the dugout at Stamford Bridge, what, you know, was a kind of goading of the away fans. Obviously, I found his explanation very unconvincing, put it that way. I'm not, you know, I don't want to call the manager of Tottenham a liar. You know, perhaps his explanation, you know, was the case, was true. But, you know, it looked to me like, you know, his ego was kind of wounded and, you know, he responded by kind of taunting the away fans. And, you know, that's not a good look. Obviously he's had kind of run-ins with lots of individual supporters and groups of supporters over the course of the season. And, you know, he's perhaps felt like he hasn't always got a fair deal or has copped some abuse that's crossed the line. But, you know, I've said before, and, you know, I sort of stand by it, that you just have to hold your tongue. You have to be the kind of bigger man, you know, and I felt that way last night. I mean, it's just foolish from Postecoglou's point of view, because basically all the supporters blame Levy for the situation that Spurs are in. You know, they have vocally and vociferously made it clear who they think's to blame for this difficult season, and they think it's Levy. And then they, you know, chanted that at every game, and they're kind of giving Postecoglou a free pass. You know, so the sensible thing for him to do as kind of results continue to go south would just be to kind of keep your head down and you know,
he doesn't seem capable of doing that, Dan, does he? I mean, there have been two or three other examples as he's gone down the tunnel and he's heard something and he's chirped back. This has been waiting to happen. And I did want to sort of believe him. The more I look at it, the more I would agree with you. He was taking a huge gamble by riling the away fans. Once you've lost them, I think you're in trouble. You're also right. Actually, of course, it's not the beginning of the end. It is nearer the end. I think we can go all the way back, frankly, to the game against Manchester City back end of last season, the controversial game where he may deep down be right and Spurs fans, or many of us may be, quotes, losers because we wanted to lose that game to deny Arsenal the title. But I thought he totally misread the situation. Then he said things he didn't need to say. And it's been a slow trickle from that moment on. And for me, Dan,
to be fair, I was thinking about that today. And I think, to be fair to him, he did come out and say he got it wrong on that occasion. And I just wish he'd done that last night. You know, and obviously he denies he was goading supporters and fine. So, you know, perhaps that was the case again. But I just feel it would have been stronger to you know, to come out and say, you know, it's been a rough season, emotions are running high, you know we're all going through it at the moment, and you know that maybe I misjudged it, but you know that was my, do you know what I mean, like just come out and own it a bit more. And one of my former colleagues, Charlie Eccleshare, you know, said on social media that I thought was a very good point, that Postecoglou kind of prides himself on straight talking, on having a thick skin, and you know, by not kind of owning the incident and what happened, I think he just kind of undermines that, you know, that kind of persona that he's built up, and these kind of, you know, qualities that he kind of says himself that he embodies. You know, he often says, you know, the criticism doesn't affect me, you know, it doesn't rock my world, he said a couple of days ago. You know, it's kind of, he paints this picture that it's all kind of water off a duck's back, but you know, that doesn't seem to be the case. You know, he seems to be, you know, very kind of, you know, his ego seems to be very kind of easily bruised, and you know, that's caused him problems, I think. You know, the City game, I said at the time, and I still kind of feel it, that there's sort of no one was wrong in that situation. It was just such a strange situation where I wouldn't have expected Postecoglou to say any different, and I wouldn't have expected any supporters to feel any different. It was just one of those very rare situations where club and fans can't really be on the same page.
Dan, I still think he could have chosen his words more sensibly then. I think it was a little indication that under a bit pressure or provocation, whatever it is, he does find it hard to really control himself. And actually, as somebody who particularly playing golf is similar in that regard, I have a little bit of sympathy for him. But when you're the manager of Tottenham Hotspur, you've got to do the right thing, particularly when you're under pressure. But I'd like to take it on a bit down. That's the flashpoint that we'll all remember, unless Spurs suddenly miraculously go on to win the Europa League. But for me, the real issue is the total lack of identity within this Spurs team. All this talk of Ange Ball is nonsense. Ange Ball really lasted for 10 heady weeks at the start of last season. You know, the lack of shots on target again, even in the last few minutes, no intensity. I never felt as though we were really going to get under Chelsea's skins and get something from that game. A stat, it may not be relevant, but in a game, Dan, where there were more, I think, than 10 yellow cards, James Maddison, who should be the fulcrum of our attacking intent, was not fouled once. I don't know quite how to assess that, but I think of Jack Grealish, for example, who I'm a big fan of, but he's always looking to do something. He's being brought down. Maddison wasn't fouled once in 102 minutes. That's the problem for me now. This team has lost all identity. We tried to say a few months ago that maybe after a dark midwinter we would see some real flourishing light and hope, and I'm afraid for me that has gone completely. We are plunged into darkness, and perhaps I'm overreacting, but that's the impression I've got from the last few performances. And I'm afraid, I'm pretty certain, it's going to be the nature of the next few performances. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Just a final thought on Ear Cup Gate before I answer that. I've got to say, I do think it's incredibly fortunate for Ange that there's not a clear photograph of him doing it, because I think that would potentially be the defining image of his tenure, unless, of course, Spurs win the Europa League and then it's him lifting the Europa League, of course. But I think, that there would have been a very good chance that that would have been the picture. His kind of inverse version of the Sherwoodian salute that kind of would have followed him and sort of defined his tenure. But yeah, I mean, I share your concerns about the team. I think I was very much in the camp of, I can't judge Spurs during the injury crisis. I really had sympathy for Ange and sort of everyone at the club while they were going through that phase of having to play every 3 days and only having sort of 11 or 12 fit senior players. And, I was prepared to kind of just overlook the results on paper, really, and wait and see what happened when the players came back. But, the players have now been back for a while. Spurs have had several games now where they've had a clear week leading up to it, including the Chelsea game. And they are seemingly getting worse. It's strange. It's almost like when they had all the injuries, they were a completely depleted side, but it looked like the players were still trying to play Ange Ball. I felt like there was still buy-in. You could see them trying to do what he wanted, but they were just kind of unable to do that for the most part because their reserves were so low and there were so few of them. And now it's kind of the opposite, and just nearly got a fully fit squad. I think the Chelsea 11 was probably his strongest 11, with the exception of Kulusevski. I mean, obviously he chose to rest Porro and play Spence. There's not much between them, but bring in Kulusevski and that's the strongest team, I think. And yet, now feels like the players are back, but they're not trying to do what the manager wants, or they don't know what the manager wants. It looks like a team without a plan, without cohesion, without structure, just without much of anything, really. And it's quite painful to watch. I mean, I think Chelsea themselves are a deeply, deeply flawed side. And really, if Sancho had been willing to actually shoot before he did in about the 45th minute, which drew a great save from Vicario, and Jackson had been a bit sharper, I think they would have been out of sight by half-time. I guess the one thing I will say is that Spurs did rally kind of unexpectedly. I didn't really expect them to be sown with a chance of getting something from that game from the 70th minute, but they very much were. But also, just kind of little things. I mean, I was sitting next to my colleague Malik, who covers Chelsea, and he kind of pointed out that when Chelsea's goal was disallowed by VAR, there wasn't really any reaction from the Spurs players. They just kind of carried on. They just kind of shrugged their shoulders. There was no sort of noticeable uplift in their body language. But then when the Spurs goal was ruled out, the Chelsea players were kind of pumping their fists and punching the air and jumping up and down and patting each other on the back. And it just looks like a team. Spurs just look like a team that are just so short of confidence and belief now suddenly.
And, yes. And leadership, you know what, Dan. Leadership. We've known that for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. You know, I do think that's true. But I don't think that's... I think that can be a bit of a red herring when you start talking about leaders. You know, it's... It looks like a group of players that, you know, and this obviously reflects poorly on Ange, that don't kind of really know what they're being asked to do. Or if they do know what they're asked to do, they no longer kind of believe in it. And obviously that's a huge problem. I mean, you said, is it going to carry on? Spurs have got Saints on Sunday. I mean, in a way, it's the best possible game. In another way, I think it's almost like a lose-lose situation. There's absolutely nothing to be gained from that match, and there's everything to lose.
Oh.
You know, you don't gain much kudos for beating Southampton. You know, it's not going to move the dial, even if Spurs put five past them again. It's really not. But there's obviously the potential for a slip-up, which would be, you know, just catastrophic for confidence and vibes and all the rest of it going into Frankfurt. So it's almost like the game you would choose, but on paper, but equally it is kind of fraught with, I think, you know, potential problems for this sort of version of Spurs.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see which 11 he picks. I mean, I was so relieved actually when Van de Ven went off towards the end, because I'm just waiting for him to clutch his hamstring. I really don't think he should play on Sundays. He's going to have to be careful. The point you made about Spurs hanging in there last night, well, I think that is a reflection of actually how very ordinary Chelsea are. You know, and they're maybe going to get into the Champions League next season, which adds to the frustration, because it's again been one of these years where you don't have to be brilliant to finish in the top five. To add to another point you made, I think, you know, for a top coach, you always look to improve your players. And for me, two or three of them, notably under Ange this season, whether they've been injured or not, have gone backwards. Udogie last night, an example of a player who seems to be totally lacking confidence and not quite knowing what he's meant to be doing. He was so exciting at the start of last season. I mean, Solanke was, you know, he was given no service. He barely got a touch of the ball. So I'm not going to really give him a hard time. I've said for a long while that I don't necessarily believe that Son's legs have gone, but he's just bereft as a player. And I do blame Ange to some degree for that. Even Kulusevski, who's not been playing recently because of injury, I think he'd gone backwards. I mean, we'd suddenly discovered Kulusevski. We knew, because he told us that his preferred position was in midfield. And when he tucked in there for a bit, he looked great. And I know he's had to play an awful lot of football, but in the two or three games before he got injured, he looked a shell of himself again. Porro, I'm not surprised that he was actually left out last night, because he has not looked the player that he can be. Romero, I don't know where his head is, and you read that he doesn't want to stay at the club. He's, you know, he's more interested in playing for Argentina and maybe either going to Atletico Madrid or Aston Villa. I don't know, but it's an absolute mess. And it does beg the question, looking ahead to Southampton, and it's not a ridiculous thought, because we've been beaten at home by Ipswich. We've been beaten at home by Leicester. Southampton got a point the other night against Crystal Palace. They're desperate to avoid becoming the worst ever team in points terms in the history of the Premier League. If, Dan, if Spurs stumble at the weekend, do you think it is still possible that Postecoglou could be removed before the Eintracht Frankfurt game on Thursday?
I mean, stranger things have happened for sure. I think, you know, the question at the moment, obviously, for the club, this season has boiled down to the Europa League, obviously, and you know, the way Spurs are playing at the moment, it does feel like they're just going to have to sort of try and stagger through the Frankfurt game and then somehow try and turn a corner you know, at some point down the line. And I guess that the sort of question for the club at the moment, you know, is, you know, what gives you the best chance of doing that? You know, does keeping Ange and Post give you the best chance of doing that, or does making a change give you the best chance of doing it? That, I mean, we've talked before about the kind of lack of alternatives. Mason hasn't really inspired anyone when he's had his two interim spells, but they've been very difficult gigs, I think. But I don't think that's an option anyone really wants to take, least of all Levy again. So, yeah, I mean, I think Spurs should beat Southampton. You know, Spurs still have far superior players. You know, Saints really are a sort of championship level side, which is why they haven't really been able to improve much under the new coach. But yeah, I mean, we were debating this on our WhatsApp group last night, weren't we? And I said, you know, I think there is a, I can make the case either way. I think, you know, there is a case that at this point, you know, you kind of go for the Hail Mary, you make a change, and you just hope for a new manager bounce to sort of try and get you through the Europa League. But equally, I think, you know, that we've seen that before with Mason replacing Mourinho before the cup final, and you know, it's a good idea till it doesn't work, and then it's, you know, then it's not a good idea, and then you think, oh, you know, we should have stuck with the old guy. So yeah, I mean, look, let's see what happens on Sunday. I think Spurs will have enough to win that game. You know, you talk about how poor Chelsea were, and I do think that, you know, there's a compelling case that kind of both those teams on Thursday night at Stamford Bridge were kind of so worried about their own shortcomings, they forgot that they were playing a kind of very flawed team. You know, if Spurs had sort of stopped worrying about kind of their own form, I think they could have really got at Chelsea. And likewise, if Chelsea had a bit more conviction, they could have put that game to bed earlier. So, they were two flawed teams, but I thought Spurs did rally. And, you know, in the end, you know, it was another one goal defeat, and, you know, it hinged on a VAR decision that I do think was, you know, the right call. But, you know, Spurs weren't a million miles away from getting something from that game. So, you know, you'd like to think that they can sort of pick themselves up, take the positives, and they beat Saints and have a little bit of kind of belief and momentum, I guess, going into Frankfurt. But as I said, I just don't think beating Southampton really moves the dial. Well, same is kind of true. You look at the December game, Spurs won 5-0 at St Mary's, and, you know, you look at it in the context of the other results, and it was an outlier, really. So that could well be the case again on Sunday.
Yeah, and it shows you where we're at, when beating Southampton at home will probably be enough to keep Postecoglou in his job. On the Ryan Mason.
Well, you can't sack him if he does beat Southampton. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
if you're not doing it after Chelsea, then, you know.
You rightly make the point that Mason came in a few days before the League Cup final against Manchester City when Mourinho was sacked. For me, that was always the most ridiculous decision, because whether you like Mourinho or not, and there's a lot not to like about him, but come a one-off cup final, albeit in front of nobody because it was the COVID year, against Manchester City, if Spurs were going to win that game, they needed Mourinho in the dugout. It was an appalling decision, for whatever reason, be it money or I don't know. Anyway, I won't go into that. But that was wrong. I don't think you could say the same if Postecoglou was removed. But I just wonder, if not Mason, is there anybody out there?
Well, you might if you know, it depends on the result, doesn't it? I think if Postecoglou was removed and Mason gets thumped, for example, I'm assuming Mason's the likeliest candidate here, or Matt Wells, or both, and they get thumped, you know, 4-1 on aggregate by Frankfurt, then I think we might be sitting here in 4 or 5 years' time saying that was a ridiculous decision, you know. So
I'm just wondering, and I appalled you a few weeks, probably a couple of months ago now, when I threw
don't
out.
Don't mention Hoddle and Benitez. I just don't know if I can do it, Marcus.
But Dan, don't just. Listen to me for a second. You bring somebody in. I know that these names I'm throwing at you are relatively down the line now. But Benitez, for example, did come in and he won this very competition with Chelsea. I mean, just a fresh name, somebody who has got a bit of tactical awareness, can spark the players. You give him a 6-week contract. What is there to lose by doing that, by just giving the fans as much as anybody else a little bit of a lift going into this period of the season?
I think part of the problem, I guess, and maybe part of the reason that Levy has stuck with Postecoglou for so long. I mean, I can't claim to know exactly what Levy's been thinking, but you know, perhaps part of the reason that he's been a bit more patient than I think people might have expected is just because I think there is no kind of obvious sort of interim-y alternative, with the exception of the guys we just mentioned. You know, that kind of generation of sort of, you know, well-liked Spurs players haven't really become coaches yet. You know, Vertonghen's just retired in a few years. If he goes into coaching and was out of work, you know, you could see someone like him being drafted in a situation like this. But there isn't really a candidate like that. I don't see kind of someone like Benitez as a genuinely viable option now. But yeah, there just isn't kind of any obvious coaches out there, I think.
Well, in that case, I won't throw in Keith Birkinshaw just to square the circle. His last game, of course, as Tottenham manager in 1984 was winning this competition. Bring him back, famously. He said there used to be a football club out there. Well, come back in, Keith. And no, maybe not. He must be closer to 90 than 80. But all right. So Southampton at the weekend. The bottom line is then we just got to cross our fingers, irrespective of what happens on Sunday. By the way, do you think he will make wholesale changes? Will he be very cautious in his team selection to ensure we don't pick up any silly injuries before Thursday night?
Well, he said today there'd only be a couple of changes. He said Spurs were past the point of, well, the squad was kind of past the point where players needed minutes. Everyone was in a pretty good shape. And yeah, he said we need to get some momentum, so we're not going to make big changes. And I think the subtext there was we need to, you know, I can't not win that game, so we can't make kind of wholesale changes, even if I'd like to. So, I expect Van de Ven, Maddison and Son to be rested. Obviously, one of the three fullbacks won't play and then will presumably come in against Frankfurt. So I could see there being four or five changes from Saints to Frankfurt. And I think, for instance, Bergvall and Odubert, you know, are very much kind of in his best 11 at the moment, aren't they? And they both played an hour at Chelsea. So I could see them both starting again against Saints and Frankfurt, to be honest, but maybe coming off on Sunday again. I don't think it's going to be a heavily rotated team. And I think that's probably for the best, given kind of the Fulham and sort of City performances and Bournemouth to an extent when there were rotations and Spurs just didn't really get going.
Well, let's hope we have a few shots on target, at least on Sunday. Surely we're going to win that game, but be interesting to see what the atmosphere is like there. Danny Boy, thank you. Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. He doesn't want Benitez, doesn't want Keith Birkinshaw, doesn't want Harry Redknapp. I honestly would take one of those just for 6 weeks. I mean, can't get any worse than this.
Oh, we can. Yeah, I promise you it can.
You probably will. All right. Thank you very much. I am Marcus Buckland. As always, please come on, you Spurs.